Welcome, everybody, here to the Mark Steiner Show here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Today, we're going to take a look at arts education, a subject that we have covered a great deal here on the Mark Steiner Show over the years, and we'll continue to cover it because of its importance. And I'm interested to hear this conversation today because as we started covering this back in 1993, it feels as if in many ways the whole area of arts education has deteriorated, not gotten stronger. And we'll kind of explore what that means and see how we wrestle through that. There is the 6th annual Progressive Education Summit coming up here in Baltimore, and we're going to talk about that with Bobby McDonald, Executive Director of the City Neighbors Foundation, that is sponsoring that that summit coming up. Joining us here on the panel are Dr. Adarsh Alphonse, founder of Project ART, an art education organization, keynote speaker at this summit. Dr. Eric Booth, who's author of The Everyday Work of Art, the Music Teaching Artist Bible, and other books. He's a founding editor of the Teaching Artist Journal and has published articles in the Harvard Education Review, Education Leadership, Symphony Magazine, many places as well, and is another keynote speaker at this conference. Dr. Shaila Rao is a co-director and instructor in the Master of Arts of Teaching program at the Maryland Institute College of Art. She's taught courses in theory, methods, and practice. And Pat Cruz is education director for Young Audiences, where she teaches artists to provide training and support in aligning programs to the state curriculum, and is a former Baltimore City school teacher and was recognized as Rookie of the Year by the Baltimore County Teachers Association and outstanding elementary art teacher of her work in Baltimore County by the Maryland State Art Education Association. In 2012, she was recognized as the Arts Education in Maryland Schools Alliance Arts Advocate of the Year. So good to have you all with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's begin, Bobby. Talk a bit about this, Bobby McDonald, about the summit coming up and the focus on arts education that you're doing.
All right. The 6th Annual Progressive Ed Summit is happening Saturday, January 23rd at City Neighbors on our Hamilton campus. And, you know, every year we started, 6 years ago, just seeing, I wonder if folks would want to get together and really talk about progressive education. And, we expected like 50 folks to show up at that first one, and 200 came on a Saturday. So since then, we've, worked hard to fundraise so we can offer this event free for teachers, and a lot of foundation folks come, people who care passionately about education here in Baltimore. So it's really a great conference. This year, we're really celebrating the arts and what that means for great practice in classrooms. We'll have teachers from private schools, from traditional schools, from charter schools. We'll have lots of university partners there. And it really is a gathering of folks who believe that children are, creative and powerful and worthy of the deepest respect, no matter what their background.
So, in the years we've been covering this issue, as I said at the very top of the hour, arts and education, which we've been doing for a long, long time, I'm going to begin this. And I'm stuttering for a moment because it's almost hard to figure out where to put my hands around this particular subject, given that we talk about it so much and we give lip service to this notion of arts education. And every education leader and superintendent and CEO talks about why there are going to be arts in their schools. But for the most part, it's baloney and it's not real. And so and that arts are important, and we never get down to why the arts are important and what role they really do play, and what does painting a picture have to do with my son succeeding in getting out of his inner city neighborhood and being taught to get to college to get a job. So those, so there are a lot of contradictions here. Let's talk about the state of things and why we're here, why we are where we are. And Eric Booth, let me start with you about why we are where we are. And I would submit, and maybe you can counteract that, which would be fine, counter that, as a pretty dismal place when it comes to arts and education.
Well, Mark, I'd agree with you that, in fact, we've seen a decline in the commitment of school systems to the value of arts education, even as they mouth blandishments of how good it is. I think one can almost take the hard view that this society has the kind of arts education it wants, with the standard definition of art as, it's good for little kiddies, it's kind of nice for them, and then for kids, that little percentage of kids who happen to want to become professional violinists, let's help them. But for everyone else, it's a kind of nice embellishment off on the side of education. So with that definition of art, we've got the kind of arts education this culture wants. I think the people on this call are actually arguing that arts is a much different thing than just that peripheral embellishment on the important things of life in schools, that in fact it's about making stuff you care about and developing not just creative capacity, but the passion to pour yourself into making things that matter and being intrinsically motivated to learn on your own drive. So it's actually developing the skills that schools are desperate to get, but because they're functioning with an archaic definition of art, we end up with depleted provision.
And Shaila, I mean, Shaila Rao, let me bring you in here. So I was really interested in this idea of a number of things that Eric Booth just said, but let's start with just one notion, that art is merely an embellishment to what we have to do in schools.
Well,
in education.
I would argue that it's integral through education, throughout education. And brain research helps us understand that creative thinking actually engages more areas of the brain than any other kind of thinking. And that through having personal, meaningful art-making experiences in school, it helps students engage more deeply and meaningfully in education in all subject areas, and really helps with long-term retention of information that they learn, and helps them see that they have a really important role in their school as well as in the larger community that surrounds them.
So, you know, Adarsh, when we hear about this, the notion that Shaila just brought up of it helps with long attention and retention, I should say, and maybe attention, I don't know, but retention for sure. So we hear that, but why do you think that it is so difficult to make that broadly understood and accepted as a matter of policy in education?
Well, I think. First of all, let me just say, but Eric and Shaila and Bobby, what about the fourth person on call?
Pat Cruz.
Pat Cruz, yeah. I think, we have some incredible advocates here and very, very happy to be on this call. Just one note, I am not a doctor. I think I was mentioned Dr. LaFont before.
we made you one today. So.
I mean, I didn't realize I was getting an honorary doctorate on this radio. But I'll take it. But that said, I think there's a tremendous amount of disinformation out there. I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of the facts. Those of us who work in education, particularly in terms of fostering creativity in the arts, we know the facts. I mean, there has been so many studies from the National Endowment for the Arts, longitudinal studies, but we've connected the dots. And I think between at least folks who are in this room, we have tried to say, look, the dots are connected. There is incredible economic impact. And retention rates is certainly an economic issue because if you can't retain students in school, then they don't graduate. So I think we see it, but I think there is a fundamental misunderstanding of the facts.
And so I'm curious. I want to get to the root of why this is fundamental misunderstanding the facts and how we wrestle that and change it. And Pat, I mean, you've been working with young audiences for a while now, right?
Right, 10 years.
10 years, and many people, even though you know, I've been to your forums and your meetings every year, mm-hmm. not every year, but when you have, and one of the things you talk about there are people who have an art infused curriculum, who use art and as part of an educational process inside regular academic programs. But still, I would imagine that many people look at young audiences and go, oh, you're the folks who come in and perform.
Right.
And then you leave again.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Well, you know, we're founded in Maryland in 1950. And a lot of people don't know we're the nation's oldest and largest arts and education network in the country. And it was started in Maryland. And I am the eternal optimist. And I do think that there's always a need. There's always so much more we can do, so much more our kids have. But I do think that things have gotten a little bit better, at least in Maryland, for arts and arts education in the last few years. I think that with the changes in the curriculum, there's more and more administrators that I see in school districts in Baltimore City, in Baltimore County, and Anne Arundel is doing a lot in arts integration, Frederick, Howard, the Eastern Shore counties. I'm seeing more and more actual leadership that's interested in this type of learning for their students because they do see that it's important to bring 21st century skills, critical thinking, creativity, and they see arts integration as a way to do that.
So if you go backwards for a moment here, I mean, I know growing up in a middle-class home in this city we had a music teacher and we had an art teacher in school, mm-hmm. public schools, and they weren't considered your serious courses. But I also had parents who paid for piano lessons, and we went to art museums on a regular basis, and art was in the house, and books were in the house, and that's because there's a certain class nature to this, and race mm-hmm. and class mm-hmm. play into this in this country. So there's that element that I want to talk about in a moment and how that fits into this. Mm-hmm. There's also the element, it seems to me, and Eric, I'll let you start off with this again, that things changed drastically in public education in the last 20 years with this, the argument that we are failing kids in public schools. And so that failing kids in public schools translates into we have to have more testing to ensure we're not failing kids. Mm-hmm. And that means we have to focus on straight mathematics and reading, and to the detriment of not just the arts, but to science and social studies and other things. Eric Booth.
Yes, I agree with you. I think what a more serious way of looking at it is that in creating the convenient measures that will assure school systems that kids are gaining ground in these kind of core areas, we have actually taken our eye off what matters in learning, which is the student-centered approach to light up their learning lives, to engage them fully. And one of the troubles arts education faces is it's not as convenient to measure as a fill-in-the-dot bubble test, and consequently, it isn't quote-unquote taken as seriously, even though there's an overwhelming circumstantial research case that a school that invests in the arts actually starts to get a whole host of ripple effect benefits that can't be equated in the causal ways that make policymakers happy, but sure can be equated in the ways that make students' engagement much higher and attendance, that make school communities much more alive and learning-oriented. So it's partly a matter of just the convenience of evaluation that has made the arts case harder to make, even though in the lives of children and schools, communities, and families, the arts are the most effective way to more actively engage parents, to increase school attendance and community involvement.
So, well, that leads to two questions. I mean, the question is then why is it so hard to make that understood?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so hard to have that be part of a public curriculum? I mean, you have schools for the arts mm-hmm. here in Baltimore City, in Baltimore County. There are other schools that are attempting it, the city school system as well. But that's separate. Mm-hmm. So, and the vast majority of young people who go through those schools don't end up spending their lives in the arts. They end up doing many things. The arts pushed them to got that discipline going for lots of things. So but why is it so difficult to make this part and understood as part and parcel of a curriculum, it's as important as reading and writing? Mm. Go ahead, Shiloh.
See, I think Mark, what the thing is, I think even educators at schools understand that this is arts have a miraculous way of educating a child that perhaps math or other STEM education subjects don't. The fact is, it's kind of our education is a top-down approach, as you know, and from policymakers onwards, it's about trying to get easy results, and easy results are a little bit sort of what Eric touched on, which are it's easy to measure how much a child performs in a standardized test, whereas how a child performs holistically through the impact of creativity in their lives, it's hard to assess. And so it's kind of, I think for the most part, our leaders take a shortcut.
And they take a shortcut, Shaila, in some ways. I think, let me see what you think about this, because I don't think it's taken seriously. I don't think that the research is taken seriously by the bureaucrats who have to run our education system.
Yeah, I'd like to start with a little historical.
I hate to sound so negative here, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to take us back to the Industrial Revolution just for a moment, where arts were brought into education and education was extended to provide basic skills for people to be able to work in factories. And the relationship of education and occupation really became the foundation of why we teach children for a lot of ways. And I think that especially in urban settings, we have a hangover from that, where it is assumed the kinds of skills that young people need for the types of jobs that people are imposing on the children in the schools. And I think that what we have is this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where if you're not teaching children in an arts-rich environment, you're not providing them with the skills that help them be flexible and collaborative and have the skills to be able to maneuver a 21st century work environment. And I think that the research that supports this is qualitative. And meaning it's about the qualities of learning, and a lot of the overwhelming research that Eric referenced earlier was, you know, it's really about when children are in arts rich environments, sequential arts education in and out of schools. It helps them with engagement in so many ways. It helps with behavioral challenges in schools and attention. And like I said earlier, long-term retention helps them feel more connected to their communities. And these are things that are a little bit more intangible. And I think that often our society looks at numbers and math and science and, you know, the PETA tests around the world of where do we stand in response to that. It's right. A little bit harder to see how do the arts inform this in a qualitative way.
But some of the work, Pat Cruz, that you all have done, I think it's important to pull this out here, has to do with the schools. I can't remember the name of the school last time I was at your event, from the Eastern Shore. Mm-hmm. That had this art-infused education,
yeah.
And kind of the results. The power of the results academically in those schools.
Yes, yeah. So I think maybe it was Willards or we had Wicomico or Worcester County Schools, and there's actually some really specific data all over our state and in other states that they are trying to do that shows that we're meeting the needs, especially of our. What they call the high needs students or the at risk, or we call them at hope students, the ones that are English as a second language, that are receiving free and reduced meals, that it makes an even bigger difference in their academic achievement. The more arts experience, the more arts learning they have, the bigger the impact on their scores, on their test scores. But I think that there are so many dedicated teachers and teaching artists that are out there trying to help our students. And the powers that be, they don't see it. And I think it goes back to what we're talking about as far as the test is concerned. They talk about the fact that you can't throw money at it. But I think that you actually can. If you actually invested in the education side more than and creating a holistic assessment, which would mean you're putting money into the actual teaching part of the students, not just the testing and the scoring and the, you know, making the investment in our students and not in the test, will if we can just invest in creating a holistic assessment, that would actually change the whole game.
I wonder again the arguments around, especially in public school districts, which are more and more, whether they're urban or rural in America, being populated by poor and poor working class kids who don't have access to the arts, Eric Booth. I mean, that's part of the discussion that has to happen, but that discussion has to kind of really figure out how to make the argument that's convincing to the public and to the folks that run these systems that it works.
You know, Mark, this is Eric. It's been a consistent finding of research projects across the country that when a school or school district chooses to really invest more intensively in arts education, the children who struggle the hardest academically are the ones who respond the most strongly. So the neediest kids, the neediest schools are the ones that gain disproportionately greater benefits, which is why across the country you see schools in perennially struggling school districts one by one beginning to turn to increased arts education, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, as a certain recognition that the pathway of high-stakes testing has not improved the lives or learning of their kids. You're starting to see them turn to education, to arts education, and the phrase I often hear for what they discover with that investment is a ripple effect of benefits. They can't quite say, you know, 7 additional hours of arts education turns into 14% improved reading scores, but they can say increased arts richness in a school starts to improve the school and the school community in just a dozen ways that are sort of measurable over time, but are very hard to make a causal research case.
That's a very important and powerful point you just made. And I think, you know, just getting into this before we have to break here is that, Adarsh, is that, you know, I was looking at some just research and the Center for Education Policy. It showed the what's happening here is that in the 5 years since NCLB, after the beginning of NCLB, that 44% of districts in the country cut back on everything except for reading and math.
Mm-hmm.
It drastically. And so, I mean, that I think that's why these conferences were important, at least to being able to push educators to a point to lobby for what we really need. Adarsh?
Absolutely. I think it's important. In fact, I would argue a progressive education summit is probably one of the most important summits that can be orchestrated, because what we are talking about is education, which, so while I am not a doctor, Mark, I am a fellow.
You are for today.
You are today.
I am today, yes, but I'm a doctor today.
Doctor for a day.
My other days, I'm a fellow at Columbia. and my fellowship has to do with politics and economics. And, you know, and a lot of what I do in New York is fundraise, and I end up meeting with a lot of people in finance. And interestingly, Adam Smith is one of the books that we did a bit of research on recently. And in book five of chapter five of Wealth of Nations, he talks about how important, and this is the least likeliest of places you would think there is an argument for the arts, but there is. And he says in book five that a holistic education is very, very important for the masses, because if you don't give the masses a holistic education, they will turn into robots. Hmm. They will dull their senses, and it will eventually lead to a breakdown. And it's interesting because that is, you know, here we are looking at someone who is the father of capitalism, arguably inspired so many sort of institutions in the United States, but at the base of it, he says, you know what, this is all, you know, assembly and all the assembly lining and all that is great, but at the core of it, you have to make sure that there's a holistic way of learning, and education is a strategic investment from a society. It is not based on, it's not like construction or giving a tax break or something. Education is the most strategic investment. It is basically preparing your country to take care of its future. You have to prepare youth for tomorrow's needs, not for yesterday's or today's, because today is going to be tomorrow's yesterday.
Right.
And, you know, when we were in college, there was something called an app, and now apps run the economy. So and no one knows what the economy is going to look like 50 years from now. I mean, our the kids we're teaching today are going to retire in 2070. Our kids that are born today. So it's kind of amazing to think that we are preparing them with the skill set of yesterday.
So I need to get some final thoughts here from folks about where we're going. And I know that we should quickly turn to Bobby, just because I want to make sure people understand where to come and how to get there and what's happening with this conference.
Sure. Okay. So January 23rd, Saturday morning, 8:30 a.m., come on over to City Neighbors Hamilton campus.
Just show up.
Come. Yeah, you can register online, but we won't turn you away if you just come to the door. We'll
okay.
have a great Zeke's breakfast for you and all kinds of good food. And, you know, since we really believe, like we want to treat our students, we want to treat our teachers well, too. You'll have a chance to be touched, moved, and inspired, and connect your emotions to your intellect, and go to great workshops. We're going to have master classes. Shiloh's teaching one of the master classes, and Adarsh and Eric are teaching them. We're going to have amazing arts experiences from the folks at Young Audiences, which we're really excited about. And we'll have over 40 workshops that share best practices in reading, writing, math, assessment, project-based learning. This really is going to be a great day at City Neighbors, and we hope that you'll join us.
It's going to be very powerful. Just a very quick closing thoughts here. Another day we'll do a longer thing about this, but I'm very curious, you, as a master, teaching this master's degree program at MICA. So what is that philosophy? What kind of teachers are you teaching?
That's a great question. We are really grounded in helping teachers find their voices, educators, to help them connect with students and who the actual students are in their classrooms. Adarsh used the word holistic. We definitely believe that a holistic education is very important. And with the outcome that teaching is a social action and that teaching is the way that we can help empower young learners. We can break outside of the barriers that are socially constructed for children in different kinds of environments, and that we can really shape the future.
So I really hope this brief conversation will have longer ones, as you know we do on arts and education. We wanted to get this in this week, and I hope this inspired you to want to come to the Progressive Summit, Education Summit this Saturday at City Neighbors Hamilton Campus. More information at cityneighborsfoundation.org, or just show up. Mm-hmm. Parents, teachers, students, be there.
And they feed you, too.
And they feed you.
And it's amazing.
And it's a very cool campus. To boot, I would say that. Bobby McDonald, City Neighbors, thank you so much for being here.
Thank
Pat Ruse, Education Director of Young Audiences. Dr. Shiloh Rao, Master of Arts and Teaching Program Director, Co-Director at Maryland School College of Art. Dr. Eric Booth, author of numerous books. And we'll be one of the key speakers there. And Dr. Adarsh Alphonse, thank you so much for being here as well. Founder of the Project Arc, good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
and join me on Thursday, tomorrow night, January 21st at 7 p.m., the Enoch Pratt Central Library, as I have a conversation with MSNBC national correspondent Joy Ann Reed about her latest book, Fracture, Barack Obama, the Clintons, and the Racial Divide, which explores the history of race relations in the United States and the political shifts inside the Democratic Party. You can find more information about this Writers Live event at calendar.prattlibrary.org, or just show up. We have to take a brief break here, but when we return, producer Stephanie Mavronis sits down with City Paper's Brandon Soderberg to hear about this week's issue featuring David Bowie and booze. Don't go away.